This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Sam 48 covers the Washington Commanders for the Washington Post. You can follow him on Twitter at Sam4TR. There is plenty to talk about as it relates to this football team, but the conversation that many fans, Sam, are having in the moment is why not Washington when it came to James Bradbury? So let's start there. Why did James Bradbury sign with Philadelphia when there was some thought that his connection to the Carolina mafia here in D.C. made it a possibility that he would land here?
Yeah, I would point to the 7.2 base salary guaranteed in Philly as one of those reasons. They've talked about the cap implications of Carson Wentz, the trade. They've talked about the fact that Landon Collins, that money will not come off the books until June 1st. There are plenty of counter arguments to be made about, hey, you could restructure some guys. You could make that space available if you really wanted to. But I think that money was the primary motivator, though I will say Ron Rivera had a chance to bring James Bradbury here in 2020 and he chose not to. So, I think it's probably a combination of things, but mostly money.
So, yeah, that seems to be kind of the counterpoint is maybe they just weren't interested. They're right now the two teams that know Bradbury the best are the New York Giants and the Washington Commanders, given that pretty much everybody that was in Carolina when Bradbury was there is in Washington now. So which do you think it was? Do you think it was ultimately they weren't one of those 11 teams Schefter reported that reached out, or they were but just wanted a great deal?
Yeah, I think it's probably both, but I would imagine just because of, both of these teams moving on that – I would imagine it could be some fit. I mean, obviously Washington has a need at cornerback. So, and he is, definitely a number two. And he would fit in, I think, alongside Kendall Fuller and William Jackson. I think William Jackson, they expect, like a lot of players on this team, a better 2022 to kind of justify the money that they gave him last offseason. I think we could talk about his usage a little bit, but not to get too far afield. I think it probably boiled down to, a desire and a cap hit. So it was probably both things that led him to not be here.
You just said something that I would agree with, but I wonder if you believe they think that, and that is that they have a need for corner. Do you think they believe that they've got a cornerback need?
I think that they do, but I don't know if there is someone out there, including James Bradbury, that is worth the money at this point. I mean, if you look at the roster, they have two proven veterans and the two guys we just named, and you have an unproven third-round pick who struggled with concussions last year in St. Juice, and then you have some, depth veterans and Danny Johnson and the like. So to me, that is, there is some cause for concern if that is your cornerback room going into the year. But I question whether they think that they can solve that internally, much like Mike Linebacker.
We're talking to Sam Fortier from the Washington Post. I think there's a general thought among the fans, and I don't think it's that far off, because I kind of feel this as well, and I'm wondering if you do, and if you think they do, as in the team, and that is, they just didn't need that much other than a quarterback and another playmaker, because they've been inactive pretty much in free agency, and a lot of that has to do, as we know, with the Carson Wentz $28.3 million cap hit, taking that contract on in full as part of the deal with the Colts. But there is this sense that I have, and I think fans have, that they haven't been super active. They haven't worked harder to restructure and be more active, because they think, as you know, a former team president used to say, they're close. Do you believe they think that?
Yeah, I do. I think that they feel, you know, especially with, you know, the roster performed pretty admirably with, you know, playing your entire season with a backup quarterback last year. I think that they think that they are closer than, you know, an average fan might think. And I think there are, you know, some, you know, reasons for optimism. You know, if certain players come back healthy, if you have a full off season, if you have everyone there, as Jack Del Rio pointed out, you know, he thought that really hurt the secondary last year, seemingly, you know, pointing to the fact that Landon Collins wasn't there for most of camp, that this team could take a major step forward. But I will say that it does look a little bit strange in contrast, just because of how active other teams in the division have been, notably the Eagles, you know, with moving up in the draft and getting A.J. Brown and now James Bradbury. So I think Washington's position on that could be legitimate, could be fine, but it's certainly, you know, you start to, you know, look out of the side of your eye and say, hey, you know, this other team is making a lot of moves. Where are y'all at?
Yeah, I just wonder, like, what they think they're close to. You know, there's so many different kind of factors here going into this incredibly unique season for them, Sam. You know, new name, new brand, a fan base that has eroded to, you know, unbelievably low proportion, you know, portions from where it used to be, and the significance of being competitive this year and just making the playoffs. And part of me thinks that they think the acquisition of Wentz was all they needed to get to 9-8 or 10-7 and snag a playoff berth, and that would be huge for them. But ultimately, contending for a title, that they don't even believe that. What do you think?
Yeah, well, this to me is sort of like, the question is like, what is success during the Carson Wentz era? And I'm not saying, you know, however long the Carson Wentz era is, right? Like, to me, and we talk about this, I think, on the beat a lot, and something that John Keim and I have like gone back and forth on is success in the Carson Wentz era a return sort of to general competitiveness, to being in these games? Because while Carson, I think, is obviously going to be a roller coaster, and you're going to have to, you know, withstand some of those poor games, and you got to hope for top 10 play, you know, a quarter of the time or a third of the time or whatever. You know, is that enough? Is it enough to be around 500, a little bit further, pushing for the playoffs in late November and December? I think, as of, you know, looking back on what this team has been for the last two decades, I would think yes. And even if Carson is a bridge to a more successful quarterback in an ideal situation, you know, I'm not saying that he's out of here after this year, but I'm just saying if he can kind of do on the field what Ron Rivera has done for the front office in the last 2 years, I think that would be enough.
It's just, we're talking to Sam Fortier from the Washington Post. It's really, this whole thing is interesting, because the Carson Wentz, like, what defines success as far as the trade goes? And they were 7-10 last year against a very difficult schedule with an unbelievable, you know, array and gauntlet of quarterbacks that they had to face. They got to 6-6 before COVID struck. They had a ton of injuries, especially to key players on offense, and obviously a key player on defense, even though he wasn't having a great season before the injury. And yet, What we're talking about is they traded draft capital and took on a $28.3 million salary cap hit for a quarterback that maybe in their minds is a success if they win another two games.
Yeah, no, it's a funny thing to look back at. I think that they think his ceiling is higher than that. I guess I would hope so. Yeah, right.
But I don't know that it's that much higher than that.
Right. I mean, I guess, like, for you, is success in the Carson Wentz era, like, are you thinking this team has to be competing for a Super Bowl? Or are you more in the camp of, like, if they win between 8 and 11 games per year, like, that's a success? We know what they think, that their expectations are probably around there, but do you think that would be acceptable?
Well, ideally, like, I would hope that most people think in terms of what does it take to contend for a Super Bowl, to win a Super Bowl. That should be the goal. But I do understand the position they're in. The position they're in is they've got a deteriorating business around the football operation. And the only way they can really start to kind of stop the decline and get some forward momentum is to be competitive over, you know, a several year period where they're like Houston was, remember, without a quarterback, but with a really good defense where with Bill O'Brien, they were winning divisions, going 9-7 and playing wild card on wild card weekend for like 4 out of 5 years or whatever it was. Like, on some level, that would be a massive boon to them if you had seasons in which there were meaningful games all season long instead of shutting it down after, you know, Thanksgiving.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the business is probably why, you know, in part that you see the Carson Wentz deal, right? Because, like, in an ideal world, when you're chasing Super Bowls and that is the ultimate goal, you know, you would have to, I think, pull off something that they couldn't this offseason, right? In terms of, like, getting a Russell Wilson. And if you decide, hey, this year is a really bad year to need a quarterback, not only in the carousel, but also in the draft, and you say, okay, you know what, we do need to be competitive. We need to get people excited. This is the first year of the new brand. We got to, you know, be competitive. We can't just, you know, it's year three for Ron Rivera. I think, like, all of those factors sort of lead to Carson Wentz, because it's like, if you say, okay, Carson Wentz is not that dude, then it's like, what are the other alternatives that are attainable for you? And I mean, we saw how down the league was on even, you know, the guys that were considered the top quarterback prospects. And so to me, it's an imperfect marriage, but it seems like all of these factors sort of lead you to say, okay, like, go get the guy who has a ceiling of, like, pretty good.
Yeah, I really think that what we're talking about here, for everybody that's listening, really is, even though they would never admit this, this really is kind of the mantra out there, and that is, we've got to be competitive and, you know, hopefully snag one of those 7 NFC playoff spots so that we are relevant in the conversation of NFL teams in 2022 with this new name, this new brand, and then we can build on that. And they think Carson Wentz is a guy that if they had last year for 17 games, they could have won 9 instead of 7 or maybe 10 and been in, you know, the mix. And that's important to them. And look, Russell Wilson would have been, I'm not saying that they weren't thinking of Matt Stafford last year and Russell Wilson this year as a way to contend in a much bigger way. But once those weren't realities, they couldn't, you know, roll out Taylor Heineke for another season or go with a rookie and have the risk of one of those painful rookie NFL seasons that ends up 5-12, even if the quarterback is making progress.
Right. And like, you're trading, I think that, like, Malik Willis to me is a great example. You are trading, you know, potentially a bigger ceiling for less uncertainty. You are saying, okay, you know, we know what Carson Wentz is, even though last season ended in, you know, maybe the ugliest fashion it could have for him in the Colts. You know, there is a certain level of confidence that he can just be an NFL starter. He can make those throws. And you know, I mean, obviously in the NFC, you're not Tom Brady and you're not Aaron Rodgers, but you're probably in the lower tier two, maybe higher tier three of NFC. You don't have the AFC gauntlet of quarterbacks, so I don't think it is unreasonable to expect that Carson Wentz gets you into, you know, the 7-4 seed conversation.
Yeah. You know, you use the description of him as less uncertainty. And so I want to talk about that for a moment, because obviously, let's just say they wanted more in free agency. And I don't know that they did. But if they did want more in free agency, and if they were more interested in Bradbury, and if the price really was impactful to the cap, which it probably didn't have to be, they could have made a couple of moves to sign him to a, you know, a $7.25 million guaranteed deal. But to me, and I've said this from the jump, not restructuring Carson Wentz's $28.3 million 2022 salary cap hit is an indication that no matter what they say about how they don't have any questions, that they clearly do, and that this is ultimately a one-year flyer with no pain if they decide to move on afterwards. Do you agree with sort of the correlation between no restructuring and what they really feel about Wentz?
100%, because it's you know, don't listen to what they say, see what they do. And when you don't restructure that guy, especially in order to help build around him this year, you are saying, you know, hey, that no guaranteed money after this year, like if we need to pull that ripcord, if we need a parachute out of this deal, if he does what he did toward the end of the year more consistently, then we need to get out of it. I mean, you heard Troy Aikman say, this is Carson Wentz's last chance to prove that he is a franchise quarterback, to put it bluntly. And so to me, you know, Washington says, hey, you know, and they put the playmakers around him. They have the catch radius guys, as we know. But yeah, I mean, the action suggests that this team is prepared to pull the ripcord if they need to.
All right, so we had a conversation yesterday, Brendan and I did, and we took calls on it. I think it's really amazing, but it's not that atypical because the NFL changes so dramatically year to year. But 1 year ago, people were talking about the defense being potentially top five. There were several people in national media that said Washington might have the best defense in the NFL, and that the defense was going to lead the way. 1 year later, we're now talking about the offense leading the way. And, you know, that happens with teams that don't have the dominant quarterback. You know, things change so quickly in terms of how you perceive them. So, A, do you agree that it's the offense that more likely than not leads the way if they're competitive this year? And B, like, where do you put the defense right now in the division?
Well, I think that in the modern NFL, the offense has to lead the way. I just don't think you're seeing too many defenses. I mean, you know, look at any of these games, and I don't think that scoring 21 or 24 points is enough most times anymore. But I will say the defense, I think that, you know, there was a little bit of buying too much of its own hype. Obviously, Chase Young last year said that, you know, it was, you know, they could have been the best defense in the NFL, and him and Montez Sweat were talking about the combined sack record. But I think if you look, if you're a believer in EPA and some of these more advanced numbers, defense is just harder to sustain. It's less linear than a lot, than offense, certainly. And when you talk about their defensive performance being a top five unit from the year before, it just was, I think, a little bit unpredictable or unsustainable to expect, hey, they're just going to take a step forward next year. I'm not surprised, particularly, you know, we talked about Jack Del Rio's comments earlier, you know, some of the extenuating factors for them not to do that. But I don't think that this unit is as bad as they were, especially through the first 6 weeks of last year before they, you know, made that move with Landon Collins, because they are actually, you know, I think better, much better against the pass, you know, in the stretch where they had that three safety look out there more often. So I think that they're going to take a step forward. They'll be, you know, probably somewhere in the top 12. But you can't rely on defense, I think, as much as you can rely on offense, especially now.
Yeah, I think the defenses in the division are pretty good. And Philadelphia, it's not just because of Bradbury, but it's Jordan Davis, it's Hassan Reddick, it's getting, you know, a guy like Brandon Graham back, etc. Lots of talk about Philadelphia. Well, you know, who knows? So as we talked to Sam Fortier from the Washington Post, give me something. I asked John Keim this the other day when he was on with me. Give me something that you're hearing they're really excited about, you know, like they really think they got something right, or that something from last year is about to blossom. Just something that, you know, maybe we're not all thinking about that they're giddy about.
I mean, the Cole Holcomb one stands out as the obvious choice that everybody is hearing about. But I would probably say the receiver core. I think that they felt like they had it last year. I think they felt, you know, that De'Ami Brown was going to come in and be one of those guys. I think I remember having a conversation with you last rookie minicamp, or maybe it was training camp, about De'Ami Brown and even Dax Milne. I think that the receiver core was something they were excited about. And now I think they really feel like they have it. Obviously, you know, you don't have – Cam Sims is your only big body receiver. But when you talk about what they've done to support Carson Wentz with the Jahan Dotson pick, with the Cole Turner pick, I think their group of pass catchers, they feel they've solidified, whereas last year it was maybe more of a cautious optimism.
That's it, Sam. You just nailed it. As you were saying that in the various conversations, I was thinking that, you know, and I think Keim mentioned a player and said that they're actually really excited about Percy Butler and what he can provide, et cetera. But you just nailed it. Like, what they really are confident about more than anything else is the playmakers they have on offense, the fact that even if he's not the right long-term answer, they're better at quarterback. And I really think they think Scott Turner can scheme it up well. I think this is what they really are counting on, is to be dynamic offensively if everybody's healthy. You know, if Curtis Samuel, Dotson, McLaurin, De'Ami Brown with a quarterback that can throw it, Logan Thomas being back, they're excited about Cole Turner. They really wanted McKissick back, even though that, you know, the way it went down was kind of weird with Buffalo. I think you totally nailed it. I think if in the conversations in that building, they really think they've got a chance to be a really good offensive football team. I think you're right about that. Why Brian Robinson Jr. in the third round?
I think that they wanted, as Ron, you know, would point out, that they want different types of backs. And I think that, you know, Brian Robinson Jr., the fact that he doesn't fumble, the fact that he is a, you know, Peyton Barber physicality with more upside. I think that when you look at Antonio Gibson, I mean, he ran super well in that Tampa Bay game, right? Even though he was like 20 carries for 65 yards or something.
Agreed.
He ran really
yes.
well. Yes. But if you have a guy that can be that explosive, you don't want him, you know, running that style. You don't want him in that position every week, or especially throughout a 17-game season. So to me, the Brian Robinson pick is to open up, you know, AG's explosiveness a little bit more. And obviously Scott Turner will have to find the right balance, ride the hot hands. But to me, Brian Robinson is about what he allows you to do in terms of Antonio Gibson's usage.
It's so true. I remember pointing it out after the game, and I didn't even know what the final numbers were. I'm like, Antonio Gibson was great against Tampa Bay, and it was his worst yards per average carry game. It was like 2.6 yards per carry or something like that against Tampa, and yet I thought he had some of the crucial plays and runs in that game. Thank you, as always, and I appreciate you being available early. I'm sure we'll talk several times between now and the beginning of the season. I appreciate it, Sam.
Yeah, of course. Thanks as always, Kevin.
Sam Fortier from the Washington Post, @SamFortr. BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credits like free bets and risk-free tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas? You can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, hotel rooms, and more at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards is sports betting's premier loyalty program, featuring exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager on the BetMGM app. Sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Virginia and D.C. only. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? 1-800-522-4700.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Are you ready?
So earlier in the show, I talked about the Seth Walder Pro Football Index, Power Index, that he and the analytics people at ESPN put together, projecting the 32 teams, a predictive analysis of what the 32 teams would be in 2022, and where the units would end up ranking. And I was just looking for, as I mentioned last hour, kind of somebody who would put together something for next year. And we'll see plenty of it between now and obviously the opening day. You know, top 10 defenses in the NFL going into 2022, top 10 offenses, et cetera, et cetera. And it just kind of came off the conversation about how we're more optimistic about the offense this year than the defense. And last year it was the complete opposite. Well, what are others thinking? Well, you know, I mentioned that, you know, the Seth Walder analytics predictive modeling that leads to this Football Power Index for 2022 had Washington's defense as the 26th ranked defense going into 2022, tied with the Giants. The Eagles and Cowboys defenses were both better. I didn't tell you about where they ranked on offense. Well, they've got the 19th ranked offense heading into 2022. And their overall rank as a team is 20 overall. You know, the Football Power Index predictive rankings for 2022. Again, this isn't the all too early, you know, power poll that ESPN puts together with all of their local reporters kind of contributing, guys like John Keim. This was their analytics department that put this together, and they've got Buffalo as the best team in the league. Green Bay, Rams, Chiefs, Bucks top five, Dallas is six. They've got Washington at 20, and they've got Washington as the ninth best team in the NFC. That seems about right to me. Going in, it's also kind of reflective of where their over-under number is in Vegas at 7.5. But last year, we spent a lot of time talking about a defense that was supposed to be really good, but a very challenging schedule in terms of the quarterbacks and the offensive players that they would be facing. You know, last year it was, you know, opening with Justin Herbert and having Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson and Tom Brady and Dak Prescott twice, et cetera, et cetera. Matt Ryan, et cetera. And how that was like one of the more unprecedented lineups of quarterbacks to be faced by one team in recent memory. And their schedule did ultimately turn out to be one of the most difficult in the league, you know, after the fact. And this year, we're focused in on kind of the offense. And I think Sam Fortier hit the nail on the head. I think right now, like if you were to talk to and sample five people in the building on the football staff and say, what are you most confident about in the team next year? I think they would tell you that they are really excited about what they can be offensively with all of their playmakers. And I think they feel like they would have been a lot better last year, even though they knew they were limited at quarterback. But if they had had Logan Thomas and Curtis Samuel healthy and J.D. McKissic down the stretch healthy, that they would have been really good. And I do really believe that there is internal belief in Scott Turner as an offensive coordinator and play caller. I know not everybody agrees with that among the fans out there, but I think they believe that. So what I did with the, you know, looking at where they ranked defensively and offensively is then I looked at what Seth Walder and the analytics group at ESPN were projecting in terms of the defenses on Washington's schedule. Last year, the defense, which we were optimistic about, we knew faced a very difficult schedule in terms of the quarterbacks and the offenses. Well, if we're more confident, as our Twitter poll yesterday indicated, 64% of you are more confident that the offense will lead the team this year than the defense. Well, what kind of schedule of defenses are they facing? So, per this Football Power Index, it was interesting to look at where they had Washington's opponents predicted to be defensively. You know, it's a lot harder, you know, in kind of thinking about it, because you, when you think about a team's offense, you think about, well, who's the quarterback? And we saw the list of quarterbacks. Yeah, they have some really good defensive players, you know, in their own division, Micah Parsons and company in Dallas twice, and others on the schedule as well. But let me just tell you that the games against, the two games against Dallas, New York, and Philadelphia, and then the games against San Francisco, Indy, Tennessee, Chicago, Minnesota, Green Bay, Houston, Detroit, Atlanta, and Jacksonville, that the average ranking, predicted ranking of the defenses they will face is 17th. So that's not even top half of the league. But really, there's more to that, because you want to break it down by team. The best defense, according to the ESPN Football Power Index, that Washington will face next season, I wouldn't have guessed this, Brendan, but it's the Indianapolis defense. The Colts actually are getting a lot of preseason love from this Football Power Index just overall. And I think a lot of NFL people do think that they have upgraded at quarterback. I actually believe that as well. But with, you know, DeForest Buckner and Darius Leonard and Gilmore, who they added, and Kwity-Paye from last year, their first round pick, and Ngakoue and a couple of other, they've got the toughest defense that Washington will face this year being Indianapolis's defense, followed by Dallas's defense. And Dallas has some playmakers on defense, and Micah Parsons turns out, at least after a year, and remember, we thought the same thing, and hopefully it will come to fruition, that Chase Young, after his rookie year also, was on the verge of, you know, significant stardom, and I still think that that's very possible, if not likely. But DeMarcus Lawrence, they had some injuries, obviously. You know, Gallimore, who missed games last year, Vander Esch, Parsons, Diggs, etc. The Dallas defense is ranked going into next year 6th best defense in the league. That's followed by Cleveland's defense, Green Bay's defense, and Tennessee's defense. Washington, per the Football Power Index, will play 6 games against teams that are predicted to have top half of the league defenses. 11 games against teams predicted to have back half of the league defenses. But there's more than that. The 11 back half of the league predicted defenses include the 3 worst predicted defenses in the NFL. They will play games against the Football Power Index's 30th ranked defense, for next year, Chicago, the 31st ranked defense in the NFL, Detroit's, and the worst predicted defense in the NFL, Houston's, next year. Chicago, Detroit, Houston, 30, 31-32 predicted rankings of defenses next year per the Seth Walter Analytics Football Power Index poll. Beyond that, Jacksonville's defense is predicted to be 28th, and I already mentioned that the Giants, along with Washington, predicted to be the 26th worst defense. So 11 of their 17 games against the latter half of the league's defenses, they'll play the three worst, they'll play four of the five worst, and they'll play five games against the predicted seven worst. I'm sorry, six games, because they play the Giants twice. Six games against the predicted seven worst in the league. So, if you believe that there's any legitimacy to this, and I think that there is certainly a way to evaluate teams going into a season, but I'm also very aware, as we all are as NFL fans, that things change and you can't predict injuries and you can't predict, you know, players that aren't the right fit that they may have acquired in the offseason, et cetera, et cetera. We know these things don't always work out. But if you took it at face value, Washington's improved offense, the part of the team that we think will lead it next year, is not facing a gauntlet of great defensive football teams. In fact, they got a lot of games against potentially bad defensive football teams. So if you're looking for another reason for optimism about the team and about the offense in particular, Carson Wentz and company is not going to have to face, as it seems now, the gauntlet of quarterbacks that last year's defense needed to face. So, again, I personally think Philadelphia's defense is ranked too low. They had them at 23. I think Philadelphia defensively has a chance to be a really good football team. I think Tennessee defensively could be a lot better than just 11th. I don't know if Dallas has the sixth best defense in the NFL. That seems awfully high. By the way, one of the teams Washington faces, San Francisco, per this Football Power Index, they've got them as the 17th best defense in the NFL. One of the teams that, when healthy, has been one of the true dominant defenses in recent years. They have taken a major step back. So there you go. More on James Bradberry when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app. I want to tell you about Window Nation. Window Nation right now has their graduation sale going on. If you've got a graduate, high school, I mean, I know a lot of people make a big deal out of middle school graduations and elementary school graduations. I just had a son graduate from college, the Penn State University. Window Nation's offering a big-time deal. If you have been thinking about new windows because your windows aren't working and your energy bills are too high, here's your homework assignment. Call Window Nation and get to the head of the class with 0% financing for 5 full years. No interest, 0% financing for 60 months, plus buy two windows, get two free with no limit, so you're paying half price on the windows. Window Nation is also offering a 6-month price quote validness. So if you get a quote by mentioning my name, it's free. You can hold on to that quote for 6 months, shop it all you want, and still have the original quote that Window Nation supplied to you for 6 months. This is why I would say, if you've been thinking about new windows, there's no risk. Call them at 866-90-NATION. Go to windownation.com. Mention my name. Get the free estimate. Take the free quote. Shop it all you want. I don't think you're going to find better product, better people, or a better deal. And then if you really want the windows, go for it. But you might as well call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com and get a price quote. Now, if you've gotten windows recently or you don't think you need windows, that's fine. But if you've been thinking about new windows and your energy bills are super high after this winter and they're about to get higher given the air conditioning needs for starting this weekend where it's going to be 97 degrees, Get new windows. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. Buy two, get two free. Pay no interest for 5 full years. That's 60 months interest free. You'll save thousands. Savings you'll only see once this year.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
All right, let's dig into this James Bradbury situation. And if you want to weigh in on it, we will open up the phone lines at 301-230-0980. Michael Lee from the Washington Post at 830. We'll talk NBA with him. But there was certainly a lot of reaction yesterday from many in our little bubble, the Washington Commanders football team bubble, about James Bradbury. And obviously a lot of the emotion, where there was emotion, was in part because he signed with the Eagles. Like, it might not have seemed as big of a deal if he had signed with, you know, the 49ers or the Browns or an AFC team. But he signed with the Philadelphia Eagles, and now the Eagles are kind of on a roll here, at least an off-season roll of trading for A.J. Brown and paying him the big money and signing Hassan Reddick and drafting well and or at least perceived well with Jordan Davis and then N'Kobe Dean much after the point in which Dean was supposed to go. And, you know, they weren't a healthy team last year, and they potentially could be healthy, and people are really starting to, you know, jock Philadelphia a little bit. So I wanted to start with this as it relates to just overall this time of year with respect to free agency. I've never gotten overly worked up about the lack of free agency signings when they have been, and there have been many years with Bruce Allen, certainly not pre-Bruce Allen, where they weren't super active. I mean, the criticism of really Bruce Allen, and it wasn't so much in the moment because I don't think I really realized it until it happened for, you know, a couple of years. I wasn't that prescient when it came to, you know, predicting how the signing of some of those free agents would work out. But, you know, the bottom line with Bruce is Bruce was the opposite of Dan and Vinny in combination. He was cheap. And, yeah, there were a couple of opportunities, Josh Norman, DeSean Jackson, and then the big trade for Alex Smith. But for the most part, you know, Bruce, you know, raised his arms in a V when he got a really good deal on an average player. Like, that's really what I think really drove him was, you know, negotiating nickels out of a deal. And, you know, the bottom line is it didn't really work that way, and it didn't work the Dan way. In the first half of Dan's ownership. And my overall feeling is that, you know, free agency is rarely kind of the elixir for bad teams. Now, let me rephrase, because I don't want to say Washington's a bad team. They won 7 games last year, and, you know, they won a division the year before that. It's rarely the answer for bad and average teams. And I think Washington's an average team heading into this year. So the fact that Washington didn't bring in a haul of free agents that more likely than not 2 years from now we would say, what happened to him? Or, you know, Landon Collins was the big signing. And Landon Collins's, you know, time here was not overly productive, really, when all is said and done. And they probably overpaid for the position and even the player at the time. But with that said, Bradbury, 1 year, $10 million deal, 7.25 of it guaranteed, the other $2.75 million in incentives. It doesn't seem like a lot of money. The spot rack number or projection, Brendan, I looked it up and I remember you telling me this, was he was going to get a deal, you know, it was going to be like a 1 year, $12 plus million deal. So he ended up getting, you know, basically 7.25 guaranteed. And then there are incentives there that could drive it to 10 million. But it wasn't an S load of money, that's for sure. So I want to start with this, and then I'll finish up the thoughts on the other side of the break, and then allow you guys to weigh in at 301-230-0980. First of all, the need at the position for the team and the player. I do think Washington needs another cornerback. And even if I and some of you believe that it's not the most pressing need, I still believe that you could make the case, no matter what, you know, no matter what numbers you want to throw at me, that Bradberry would be an upgrade over anything they have, that he'd be the best corner in the room. Now, I'm not saying that it would be by miles. You know, is he an elite corner? No. Does Washington have an elite corner already in its cornerback room? No, it doesn't. I personally think Bradberry would help. But I also concede that I don't know Bradberry and the higher-ups in this organization, Ron Rivera, Marty Herney, assistant defensive backs coach Richard Rodgers, who was in Carolina with Bradberry, they do know him, and they know him well. So while I think, and maybe many of you think, the team needs more cornerback help and that Bradberry's ability would match or exceed that of the players currently on the roster, they know better. And maybe part of this is they don't think that Bradberry would be a significant upgrade over what they have. Or maybe they know something else or a lot more about Bradberry. Because they did, as Sam Fortier pointed out when he was on with us earlier this hour, they had a chance to sign him if they really wanted him, and the Giants did it. Gettleman did it. So, yes, I think they need a corner. Yes, I think Bradberry would be a really strong addition ability-wise to the cornerback room, but they know the dude. So one of the answers to this is maybe they didn't really want him. Schefter reported that 11 teams reached out and expressed interest. My belief is that Washington was probably one of those teams, but they probably wanted a deal. Now, maybe this was a deal for them. And somebody tweeted out something yesterday that I'll share with you when we come back that indicates that maybe, just maybe, Bradberry didn't want Washington. More on that and your calls on your thoughts about Philadelphia signing Bradberry and Washington not signing Bradberry when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.